This is fun. The FU Network.
And now, here's Ed Desauk with his COVID-19 update.
Conrad Black is a schmuck. Now, probably none of you need to be told this. Anybody who's read his bloviating nonsense in the Globe and Mail, the National Post, anywhere on social media, know that Conrad Black is a schmuck. He makes his reputation by going against popular opinion, which he thinks makes him sound much, much smarter. And the truth is, in most cases, popular opinion is based in absolute ignorance. In this case, Conrad Black's opinions are based in absolute ignorance. His most recent article saying that the world has succumbed to hysteria as opposed to a virus? No, I'm sorry. The world has not succumbed to hysteria. There are people who have succumbed to hysteria. There are people who have spread panic for no good reason. And those people deserve to be flogged and put in stockings like in the Middle Ages. So don't listen to Conrad Black. But let me talk for a moment about the people who think it's a good idea to spread panic. Because there are people out there, when I have tweeted that, hey, panic is a bad idea. The most important thing during this time of COVID-19 is accurate information. Getting accurate information out there. And that includes accurate information on how many people have been infected and how many have died and how many have recovered. It includes the accurate information that people who are infected, it doesn't mean that necessarily they're going to show signs of being sick. It doesn't show signs that they're going to have any permanent damage when they recover. It also doesn't mean, when there's been new cases detected, that these people are going to die. The infection rate is not equal to the death rate. You try to point this out so people stop panicking and start thinking rationally. And all you get is this new range of, I don't know if they're liberal or conservative, I don't know if that even matters. All I know is there's this new white knightism where people stand up on Twitter and will shout you down if you say, don't panic. If you tell people to follow rational procedures as prescribed by medical officials, but don't panic, they tell you, you monster, you want people to die. That's right. I had at least two people tell me when I said, don't panic, think rationally. They told me, you're a fucking monster, one of them said. And the other said, you just want people to die. How many people dead is good enough for you? It's like, what kind of fucking idiots are you? You read into what I say. You take from it what you want. You take from it what you can use to assemble a soapbox. So that you can stand up there and then take that soapbox and climb from that soapbox onto your high horse so that you can scream to everybody about what a good person you are because you think it's a good idea to panic. Because people think panic is good. Because panic means that people who would otherwise just dismiss it will obey these sensible precautions out of panic. No, that's not how panic works. What you're talking about is rational thought processes. Panic doesn't promote rational thought processes. Panic promotes panic. You know what else panic promotes? Panic promotes health problems in other people. People who have anxiety conditions, people who have heart conditions. It makes people do stupid things. You think I'm joking? A friend of a friend committed suicide last week. Why? Because they couldn't... Why? Because they have an anxiety condition, which is a medically diagnosed condition. And because of that anxiety condition, they couldn't stand all the doom and gloom and panic, the idea that the world is coming to an end, and they killed themselves. So to all of you out there who think panic is a good thing, go fuck yourself. Panic has never achieved anything of any notable good. If you want to do something good for the world, amplify the actual information that's occurring in your country. Yes, your country. Because you know what? Those global statistics, they don't mean shit. And here's why. because the global statistics take into account, they take countries from the first world, the second world, the third world. They take countries with good access to health care, great access to health care, poor access to health care, and no access to health care. They take countries with good education, education, and no education. They take no geographical information into account. They lump in demographic things as if we're all the same demographic. They put it all together in a blender, and they come out with an average for the world. Well, the fact is, every country is different. We all have geographical, cultural, demographic, economic factors which affect how different countries are responding to the pathogen, okay, and to changing their behaviors to flatten the curve. So when you give a global average, it's a load of shit. It doesn't mean anything to your own country. If you want accurate statistics, pay attention to the statistics from your country. Because quite frankly, what's happening in Djibouti or Sudan or anywhere else in the world really doesn't have a whole lot in common with what's going on in Canada. And quite frankly, Italy doesn't have a whole lot in common with what's going on in Canada, even if on the surface it seems like there's similar trajectories and there's similar planes and curves. It doesn't mean shit, okay? And here's why. Italy is a different culture. Italy, though many people will consider this racist, but it was backed up by an article in the New Yorker and others, Italy has for years been taking Chinese labor, cheap Chinese labor, from places like Wuhan province. In fact, there was a time, I don't know if it's still running, there was a daily flight from China to the fashion capital in Italy of Chinese workers, back and forth, moving these people because Chinese workers work cheap. And people around the world like the label that says made in Italy, or that it's an Italian fashion, assuming that Italian craftspeople are all sitting there working carefully on the garment that they're going to buy, when in fact it's nothing different than being produced in the factories in China in mass numbers. Okay, so there was a large number of Chinese citizens in Italy from infected areas that were in Italy. And the bodies were being, the suspicion is, the bodies were being thrown in the ocean by the mob, the Chinese mob, because they would take the person's passport and then throw the body into the water, because the Chinese mob is making money by bringing these people in. And they don't want anything to deter people from China who are desperate and want a decent wage, or a wage that's decent to their way of life. They didn't want anything that would deter people from continuing to come to Italy to work for peanuts, according to the Italian scale of living. So the Chinese mob was allegedly hiding the number of people who were dying by just throwing them in the water. And let's keep in mind the fact that the vector is that old people tend to be a very high risk group for just about anything. And there are Italy's population is 23% of old people. It's 60 over. Those 60 isn't really old anymore, but it's 23% of Italy is 60 years of age and over. 15% of Canada's population is 60 and over. That's an 8-point spread. That's significant when you're talking about numbers in the millions. And let's not forget the fact that Italians, like many Europeans, and this is as annoying as shit, no matter who does it, they like to greet each other by kissing on the cheek. Not one cheek, it's not enough, but both, okay? And it's always embarrassing when somebody European goes to do that to you here in North America, and they go and give you a kiss on the cheek, and you think, okay, good, at least that's done. And then all of a sudden they're going for your other cheek, and you realize you got to give them your other cheek. Can you just not say, hey, how you doing? Anyway, that is a typical Italian greeting. That's a great way to spread a disease that's spread by droplets. and airborne and proximity. So there are a lot of factors that make Italy and Canada different. So don't tell me that Canada and Italy are identical. Now let's move on to this notion of death panels and triage, and doctors are going to determine which people live or die, which people are worth getting ventilators, and which people are going to be just allowed to die. Well, guess what? It happens every single day in hospitals. Triage happens every day in hospitals. You think about it, you don't want to think about it because it bothers you. But the fact is that there's always a limited amount of resources in hospitals, and medical professionals have to determine if we put these resources towards this individual who is most likely not going to survive even with these resources, and we don't give them to somebody younger who will, or healthier, who will survive with these resources, who do you give them to? They do this every day. And so they determine that the person who is least likely to survive, even with these medical resources, they instead make them comfortable to face the end. This happens every day. Look at the list for transplants of organs, okay? There is a hierarchy there as to who, because there's a limited number of organs available, viable organs. So there are various classifications as to who gets higher up on the list for getting an organ transplant. And that means that some people are left to die without an organ transplant because they don't meet the criteria as well as some other people. Happens every day. And yet we're making out like this triage situation now is something brand new for COVID-19. It's not. It's unfortunate, but welcome to the real fucking world, where we don't have unlimited resources ever, and where some people, no matter how much we do for them medically, are still gonna die. I'm not saying that it's a joyous thing. I'm not saying it's the best of all worlds. I'm saying it's this world. And we need to stop pretending that what's happening now with COVID-19 and the allocation of resources to patients is something that is somehow brand new to this manifestation. It's not. It happens every day, but we turn our heads away from it because it bothers us. Like we turn our heads away from everything in the world that bothers us, and we focus on the size of Kim Kardashian's ass. And as for people comparing this to the flu, nobody is really, I don't think, nobody of any common sense is saying that COVID-19 and the flu are the same, that they're going to have the same outcomes, even though the flu is in fact itself a type of coronavirus. They're not related in that way. However, for some reason, people don't freak out when in Canada every year, on average, 3,500 people die from the flu. Who the hell even knew that? I'm sure medical professionals did, but did you? Because I sure didn't until I looked into it. 3,500 people die from the flu every year? And you know who dies? The same people who are dying from COVID-19. People with underlying conditions and people of advanced age. Often, those two cohorts go together. It's called comorbidity, which is kind of a morbid term, but I guess that's the point. The point, I tried to make when I was pointing out the number of people killed by the flu every year is that, Jesus, look at how many people are killed by the flu every year. I'm not trying to say that that's the number that are going to be killed by COVID-19, that it won't be a greater number than that? I don't know, and quite frankly, neither does anybody else. That's why when you read these damned headlines by doctors who say millions could die, Don't take that as millions will die. Millions could die means if people do nothing, okay? If people don't do anything to flatten the curve, if they don't take responsible actions, if they don't take responsible precautions, yes, it's possible. If we sit around with our thumbs up our ass, that many people could die. It is unlikely that that many people will die, okay? And hey, I just said nobody knows for sure, and I don't either. It's just rarely have we seen a situation where the worst case scenario winds up being the actual scenario. It's good to prepare for the worst case scenario. It's better to prepare for it. But know that you are preparing for a worst case scenario. Don't expect that that is actually 100% the most plausible scenario. Don't think the world is going to die. It's the Walking Dead. The Chud are going to come up from underneath the sewers and take over. It's not like that. And I wonder why we don't seem to give a shit every year that 3,500 people in Canada die of the flu. The same people who are dying of COVID-19. Why don't they matter? Like, it's just because it's an annual thing, we don't even look at the numbers and we don't even think about it. And maybe we should. Not that we can stop it, not that we can change it, but life ended due to an illness is the life ended due to an illness. And I think that there needs to be some understanding that when people say, hey, you know, 3,500 people die every year from the flu. What the hell is that? Why aren't we putting more efforts towards trying to stop that? Because it happens every single year, whereas COVID is new. Now, COVID is not going away. People point out, COVID-19, it'll go away in the warmer months, but it'll come roaring back in the fall. Okay, roaring back in the fall? Here's what's going to happen. Experts seem to agree that the largest percentage of the population when the worst has passed will be people who had COVID-19, didn't even know it, didn't show any symptoms, didn't even know it, got past it, developed the antibodies, went on with their lives. Then there will be another percentage, since it varies between 80 and 85% in first world nations, of people who recover from COVID-19 with no lasting damage. Those people have antibodies. So antibodies are spreading in the population. Whereas when this first hit, there were no antibodies, nothing. So when and if this virus comes back in the fall, and it's more likely when than if, there will be so many more people with antibodies than there were when this first started. So will it be the same kind of outbreak, the same kind of impact? It seems unlikely. And follow me on this. No, I'm not a medical expert. You know, they say laughter is the best medicine, and I've made people laugh on TV, so I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. So follow me on this. The effects of an infection on a population that has no antibodies is going to be stronger than the effect of that same infection on a population that has now gained antibodies. Does this not make sense? Our bodies are now ready to fight this thing off. It doesn't mean that you get sick, doesn't mean you won't get the illness, but it means that it's not going to kill as many people. It means that we are developing an immunity. That's what happens. You know, there's people saying this is going to go on until the fall. It's going to go on for months. People are going to be locked in their homes. We're going to have to self-isolate. And you know what? Maybe. Unlikely. But maybe. And I hope it doesn't actually do that, because people will only stay self-isolated for so long, because it really will fuck you up. It screws up your mental condition. As much as many people, including myself, I had all kinds of plans for creating this programming that was going to allow people to call in through their phones and stuff and connect us all. but there was some technical problems, and so we've delayed that. But lots of other people are doing it. We're connecting. We're using the internet to actually connect with each other. We've been using the internet now for years. Instead of a tool which can connect the world, it's the technology's been used as a way to separate us into smaller and smaller little niches and communities. The internet has divided us. Now that we're all locked up, people are using the internet to connect us, which is what the potential for the damn thing was in the first place. That and porn. Well, porn reached its potential, but the idea of connecting us as a global community, that didn't happen. Instead, we got people going into their little silos of conspiracy theories and bias confirmation and just going places where they could hear shit that made them feel smart and made them feel comfortable that they knew what was going on in the world, even if what they were hearing was a load of shit. What this disease has done is, while people are reaching out through the internet to try to create parties and communications and share stories and share entertainment, the internet is actually being used to bring us together, which is what it was supposed to do in the first place. And will this continue after the pandemic? I think this may be one of the only things that continues after the pandemic has passed. The people getting the sense that the internet can bring us together, and that it's fun, that it's great to be have a DJ in New York playing songs and have somebody in Italy or in some other far off country dancing to the same music at the same time and showing them dancing through their webcam or through their phone or whatever the hell. I think that the internet will have, people have a greater sense of what the internet can do and how much fun that is and how much better it is for it to connect us rather than separate us into people talking about 9/11 was an inside job and we never went to the moon and all this other shit and Alex Jones who talks nonsense and then sells supplements, shit like that. I think the internet will be the biggest change, the use and regard for the internet will be the biggest permanent change after this is all over. Because people say, well, this is giving people with stores shut down, it's giving people the chance to really reevaluate what's important, and it's giving people the chance to think about their lives, and maybe that will change the way we live our lives after the worst is over. No, it won't, okay? You know why? The same way, you ever gone to a funeral, and everybody there is somber, and all of a sudden every one of them is Confucius? Everyone's like got some sage wisdom to share. You know, you go up to people you haven't seen in a long time and say, you know what, we really should get together. No, really, this time, I know we've said it before, this time we really should get together. Life's too short. And people say, you know what, we shouldn't keep fighting. Life's too short. We should just bury the hatchet. And people come up with all kinds of profundities about the real meaning of life. And that usually lasts as long as it takes for them to get in their car and drive to the mall. Okay? That shit never happens. The people who say we really should get together, they don't get together. The people who say we should really bury the hatchet, they don't bury the hatchet. They might be more civil. They might not be as acrimonious, but they don't bury the hatchet. Okay? And all the profundities about the truths of life and what's really important, that gets lost almost immediately. As soon as we, sit down and watch ads on TV telling us how our life is not good enough because we don't have this kind of TV or this kind of makeup or we don't drink this kind of drink or we don't drive this kind of car. And I have nothing against the advertising industry. If people are willing to buy into that, then, it's buyer beware. But I don't think that this illness and the self-isolation and the pulling together to self-isolate, which in itself is, yes, kind of oxymoron, I don't think it's going to change a whole hell of a lot. I think we'll start to see people, initially staying a little further away from each other, a little more social distancing, and then in no time, people will be crawling over each other to get their deals on Black Friday. Okay, we'll see people crushing each other in lines at the supermarket. It's going to go back to the way it was, because that's what people want. After a time when things have been completely unpredictable, completely outside the norm, people want and need, for their mental health, they need to return to some semblance of the world the way it was before, some semblance of normalcy. There may be a slight new normal, but there, underneath it all, there will be familiarity. There will be a world that they understand, that they recognize. People will need that again. Okay? That's why I think that the economy is going to do better soon as, I mean, right now the economy is in the shit. Because how can you have an economy when people can't go out and stores are closed even if they did? But once this, the worst is over and we're told we can come out of our houses, you know, we blink at the sun like moles coming out of our holes. Oh, the sun, it blinds. Once that's over, we're going to want to reward ourselves. And, you know, of course, once everybody's got their jobs back and we deal with the debts that amass during this time, once things are on an even keel, people are going to want to reward themselves for having been good during this whole time, for having pulled together. And they're going to want to reward themselves to make themselves feel good, to try to dispel all the feelings of helplessness and fear that had been gripping us for however many months or weeks that level of fear grips us. And so we're going to see people going on vacations, probably within their own countries. We're going to see people buying frivolous items or just going out and buying things like jeans and clothes because they want to reward themselves. They want to make themselves feel good because they've felt so scared for so goddamn long. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think that is a sensible way to slowly restore mental health, which is being eroded by self-isolation and panic and fear. And the economy, by the way, is not a minor thing. You see on the internet people saying, people, who gives a shit about the economy when people are dying? Blah, 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 blah. You know what? There's a possibility of how many people may die from COVID-19. There's a possibility. Like, they talk about this many may die, okay? This many who have contracted it may die. This many may contract it. But you know what's not a may? What's not a possible? What's not a postulation? The reality that people right now can't pay their bills. People who live check to check, they can't pay their bills. All right? They have children. They have dependents of other kinds, or they live alone. Doesn't even matter. People are like, how the hell am I going to put food on my table? How the hell am I going to keep a roof over my head? That's now. That's not possible. That's not this may happen. That's this is happening. So when people are concerned and express concerns about the economy, it's not putting money before people. Because guess what? People need money to survive. That's right. Even in your vaunted liberal, far-left, socialist paradises, people still need money to buy things. Okay? To buy food, to buy things like that. So having a concern about the impact the economy is having on people right now is no morally different than having concerns about the impact that the infection is having upon people, okay? Upon people's health. Because what do you think the economy is? The economy is people working, taking the money that they make, and buying things. Because when they buy things, the people who run the stores can then take that money, make a profit, and then go and buy things, and buy homes, and buy cars, and buy stoves, and buy shoes, and buy whatever the hell. Buy whatever they buy at the corner variety store, which helps keep mom and pop, in business, helps them pay their bills and live a life, okay? The economy is not just some statistic. The economy is us, okay? And what affects the economy affects us. And what affects the economy affects the most vulnerable first, always. So if your concern is about people who are vulnerable, don't go bitching about people who are concerned about the economy. Because concern about the economy is concern about those people who are the most vulnerable. So shut the fuck up with all your far left Bernie Sanders infected shit, okay? And socialism, and we should maybe think about ending capitalism and blah, 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 blah. I can't stand it. It's nonsense. I mean, does this crisis give more emphasis on the reason for a guaranteed annual income? I think so. And by the way, guaranteed annual income doesn't mean that everybody gets a check for the same amount of money. What it means is if you're earning X amount of dollars, but it's beneath the poverty line, it's beneath the ability for you to actually live a life. Because remember, the minimum wage was enacted. When it was enacted, it was at a number that would allow people to live a decent life. If they were minimum wage earners, they could still have a decent life. They wouldn't have to worry about which bill to pay, or whether to pay a bill or put food on the table, or shit like that. That's what the minimum wage is for. It's so that we don't have people starving. And you know what? As much as you might think, well, I guess if they're poor, it's their own fault. They must be lazy. This is a land of opportunity. Shut the fuck up, okay? People who are poor, it's not their fault. It's not some judgment from God. It's losing the genetic lottery in most cases. It's being born into a family without resources, or being born with a skin color or an ethnicity that reduces their ability for them to get hired for jobs that they're qualified for, or to even get into higher learning institutions, which will make them eligible for jobs where they can earn money, or where they can go to interviews and experience subtle racism and not get the job. I've lost my train of thought. I've gone into something else altogether. All right. Guaranteed annual income, what it actually means is if you're not earning enough to live, the government will top up that amount so that everybody has enough to live. It's not the government writing a check for the same amount of money out to every single Canadian and giving it to them. It's not that. Guaranteed annual income means everybody makes at least X amount of dollars a year so that they can survive. And you know what? This is a good thing. Because if you're a capitalist, think of enlightened self-interest. If you're just a pure capitalist and don't give a shit about human beings, which is not how most capitalists live, but I don't want a society where people are dying in doorsteps. I don't want a society where people are so desperate they're driven to crime so that we don't live in a safe place. I don't want a society where people don't trust each other, like in the U.S., where, quite frankly, people don't trust their neighbors in the U.S. Americans don't trust each other. Otherwise, why the fuck do you carry a gun everywhere? All right? Americans don't trust each other. That's what that type of society has developed. I have an enlightened self-interest. I don't want to live in that kind of world. I want to live in a kind of world where I know that I'm not going to see people starving and dying. I want to live in a world where I know that people have at least a basic level of survival, of income, of the ability to provide food and shelter to themselves and their kids. I want to live in a world where I know that I don't have to worry for my security because someone's been driven to such absolute desperation that they'll do something, that they'll rob me or whatever the hell, because the desperation has made it so that they have no other, they think they have no other choice. This is investment in building a better society where everybody lives better. That includes the middle class, that includes the rich, okay? We all live better. We all live better in a safer, cleaner society when we, if you don't want to call it compassion for other people, fine. You don't have compassion. As a side note, fuck you. But if you don't have compassion, think about it from a purely selfish point of view. It's better on you to pay your taxes and see those taxes go to social support programs so that you can go out on the street without fear of your neighbor, without fear of tripping over bodies, all right, without fear of seeing people starving like in a Dickens novel, which, I'm sorry, that's got to tug at somebody's heart. even if you barely have one. We don't, it is in everyone's enlightened self-interest in a capitalist society to have social support programs that create an environment, that create a society that actually benefits everybody. It benefits the people on the social supports. It also benefits those who don't need social supports, because it creates a society where people aren't desperate and you don't feel the need for security. You don't feel the need for fear, for gated communities. All around, everybody wins, okay? It's not all about bleeding heart shit, okay? It's about common sense and critical thinking. So get off your liberal versus conservative bleeding heart versus having no heart. Get off that shit. Forget the teams that you're on. Forget your identity politics. It only makes sense. Guaranteed annual income only makes sense because also when people have money, they're able to buy things, even if it's just small things like foodstuffs and so on. That keeps the local stores in business. That keeps, when people have no money, they buy nothing. That's not good for a capitalist society, okay? So it makes sense to have guaranteed annual income. It makes sense to make sure that everybody is making at least enough to live on. And if you disagree with that, well, you're free to have your own opinion, because they say opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one, and some of them stink. All right, and that is my little update on my opinions on what's going on with COVID-19. And by the way, I have to add this. It sort of goes back to what I was saying at the beginning about people who say panic is good. You know the thing that panic isn't good for? You know the thing that hysteria isn't good for? And you promoting, trying to promote the worst possible outcome as the most likely outcome? It gets people who fall into two camps, okay? One camp, which is they just feel so powerless to stop anything that they just go out. They don't take any precautions. They're so defeatist, they feel like it's gonna get me anyways. I may as well go out, do what I'm gonna do. And they wind up spreading illness because they just don't have any sense that anything they can do will make anything any better. The other thing it does is when you start making proclamations about the end of the world, there's people who are going to say, you know what, that sounds a little bit hyperbolic. And they say, you know what, I'm smarter than the average bear. I'm not going to buy into the hyperbole. And so they wind up rejecting everything because they say, I'm not one of the sheeple. This doom and gloom sounds completely outsized. And so they just reject the whole damn thing and don't listen to any sensible precautions. Whereas if you approach things on a critical thinking level, a level that is calm and rational, you don't get as many people saying that I'm smarter than everybody else and I'm gonna reject this while everybody else engages in mass panic. Okay, that's another reason why panic is not good. So all of you out there who think panic is good because it forces people to comply, no. Panic isn't good because it gets people to hoard toilet paper. And then if you've read the news, people who run out of toilet paper because other people have hoarded it have taken to cutting up their t-shirts into little toilet paper sheet size and wiping their ass with that and then trying to flush a cut up t-shirt down the toilet and blocking their toilets, overflowing their toilets, okay? What the hell? Sometimes I wonder if we wouldn't be better, if we could target a virus that just hit people who I can't stand because they're fucking ignorant, the world might be a better place. But I also recognize we need the ignorant people because somebody's got to buy a lot of the useless shit out there that helps keep the economy going. Anyway, that's it. Stay tuned. There'll be updates regularly. With this podcast and about COVID and what's going on in the world. Plus, my new show, Videocracy, which is going to be a show not designed to yell at you and tell you the worst of the world, but to entertain you. And I'll be interviewing some pretty notable Canadian stars. Okay, I know you got you. Canadian stars? Who gives a shit? No, there's some good, real good talent of shows that people really watch. And some of these people have been on American shows. So, hey, credibility right away. as well as maybe politicians, other people, and we're going to try to get that stir-crazy programming up and running, which is the kind I mentioned earlier, where people from around the world can participate through whatever communications device they have to have some fun. Okay? So that's all coming up. And that's it. And now is not a good time for me to be telling you that us here at Fund the FU Network and FU Politics could use your support on Patreon. I don't know if Ezra Levant and his crazy foaming at the mouth right-wing nuts who support him to the tune of something like $1 million to $2 million a year he gets out of these crazy rednecks. And people who are, you know, more moderate don't really feel besieged and afraid, and so it's harder to get donations from people and support to keep this shit going. But the FU Network and FU Politics especially is designed so that you can get reliable information from people who sound like you. It's the much music formula. People who sound like you, who look like you, who live like you, because they are you. No pundits, no members of the media elite, none of the aristocracy from you know, none of the rich people, none of the regular pundits, but regular people who go through life living the same shit as you and experiencing life like you do. That's what this is about. And I recognize that's not a great, you know, I'm not creating a giant threat that you feel you need to dig into your pockets to help to support. But, you know, we're on Patreon, which is a subscription service, which starts at $1 a month. You'd be surprised how much $1 from enough people adds up. I mean, you look at how Sanders and before him Obama built huge war chests on very small donations. Patreon.com, if you want to support us, Patreons with an E, okay? patreon.com/FU Network TV. And if you want to just give a one-time boost, one-time donation, that's very appreciated too. That you can give it PayPal through our email address, funetworktv@gmail.com. And you know, I'm not asking for money because we all want to get rich over here. We have equipment that we've been using nonstop, putting it through its paces for over a year now. And it's wearing out. It's breaking down. It needs maintenance or it needs replacement. We already have one laptop, our first laptop, the one that launched this network. It's pretty much dead. And our budgets aren't budgets. We didn't plan for having to replace or do serious heavy maintenance on this equipment that allows us to bring this programming to you. That's what we need the money for. Shit like that. Also, we'd like to go to video for some of our programs, and we'd like to launch FU Music to create that spiritual successor to Much Music and have fun with music and pop culture and shit like that again. We'd like to do all that, and that's why we ask you for your help, because we don't want to go to big corporations because there's always strings attached. They always say, how about if you do programs like this? And how about if you don't talk about this topic? And how about if you... No, we want this FU Network and FU Politics to be free discussion. We don't want any strings on us, because strings are attached to marionettes, not puppets. And marionettes are fucking creepy. You ever watch that show Thunderbirds? Holy shit, that thing will give you nightmares forever. Anyway, we don't want to have to go to corporations who want to put strings on what we can talk about and how we can talk about it. We want to talk about the things you're talking about. In order to do that, we need you to help us out just to keep ourselves going. All right? So help us out. Patreon.com/FU Network TV or PayPal. The one-time donation is at our email address through PayPal. FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And if you think I like doing this tin cup shit at the end, I can't stand it. But you know what? We're doing these programs for you. All right? FU stands for an attitude, but it also stands for you. Okay? For us. That's why we're doing this shit. Because nobody else was doing it. And we were being taken over by these Ben Mulrooney 24-hour-a-day giant shiny teeth people on mainstream media who are trying to fight the lowest of the clickbait websites by lowering their journalistic standards and giving us bullshit and not talking about topics that we really need to talk about and that we talk about as people amongst ourselves, but we don't see reflected in our media. We're reflecting you because we are you. All right, that's enough. Don't forget to watch for the COVIDiocracy show starting this week. I got some great guests, and there'll be more. And it's just for entertainment purposes, really. Not more doom and gloom. I think you had enough of that shit. All right, I'm Ed the Sock. You can find me on Twitter at Ed the Sock. That's simple enough, eh? Facebook, I'm at Ed the Sock dash, at Ed the Sock dash FU Network TV is my Facebook page. And on Instagram, it's Ed underscore the underscore Sock. All right, so follow me and let's stay together. All right, see you later, Canada, and whoever else is listening, wherever else in other parts of the world or out there in the universe. And thank you, whoever crashed at Roswell, for giving us the technology so that we can have smartwatches. Okay, I'm out.
This is fun. The FU Network.